This is our last session for this program. And my own sense is that in the course of these 9 weeks, my sense of where we're headed with this and what to do with it has shifted a bit. And actually, the key term in that is the term that we looked at a couple of weeks ago and that comes up in this chapter, and that term is intimacy. The senses and a focus on the senses have the opportunity or present the opportunity to let us engage with being, let's say, in a more intimate way. So we'll have some things to say about that this week, but I also want to kind of point us toward that as, you know, what you can take away with you from this program and what you can be exploring in your daily activity. So I noticed that there were no posts for this week on the website, so I don't know if people found this exercise helpful. I really want to start with the exercise and say a few things about it, and then we'll do it again and see what comes up for people. The suggested exercise was to look at the establishing activity of the senses instead of what gets established, right? So the activity of the senses rather than what the senses present to us. And if we think about that, we'll probably look a little later, we'll look at that interesting list that Rinpoche gives in this chapter about the nine levels of the senses, right? So the first level is the senses as a tool, and that goes very much with the notion that the senses are a way of getting in touch with reality. Somebody who joined us probably needs to turn off their speakers because we're getting some feedback. So the notion there would be, you know, we use the senses as a tool to get in contact with a world around us. We use them as a tool for perception. And that's exactly the model that we are questioning, challenging, exploring, and that does go to the nine levels that Rinpoche talks about. But we'll come back to that. Right now I'm just trying to make the distinction between focusing on the establishing activity of the senses and the outcome of that activity. And so the suggested exercise was to focus on the establishing activity. Now I want to say a couple of things about that and then we'll do the exercise again. I think that if you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to focus on activity, any kind of activity actually, but in this case the activity of the senses, the first thing that you look at, the natural orientation, is to look at time, because activity has to do with time, you know, it has to do with the dynamic of time. And so if you look around the room, let's say, and you say my focus is the ongoing activity of the senses, and in this case then of sight, it's natural to focus in on how your perception changes from moment to moment. And actually last week when we talked about the practice, and I guess did the practice, I suggested that a good place to start would be to take an object that's not moving so that it didn't go too much in that direction. In other words, so that we weren't kind of swept up in the dynamic, but we're really looking more at the senses as an ongoing activity. So the natural thing in doing this practice is, in effect, to make it a kind of mindfulness practice, where you say, what's happening now? You know, what are the senses presenting now? Let's put it that way. And what are they presenting now and now and now? And that's a good practice. Mindfulness is always a good practice. But I think that this is something, I think it goes a little deeper than that. And you know, in an earlier chapter, Rinpoche said you could look at the activity of the senses in terms of time and space and knowledge. And I suggested something about that in the orientation this week. What I want to suggest right now is focusing on the knowledge aspect of the activity of the senses. So there is still somebody who has their speakers on, so we're getting some feedback. It doesn't seem too bad, so maybe it doesn't bother other people, but if you could experiment a little and see about turning your speakers off, that might be good. Okay, so the knowledge dimension of looking at the ongoing activity of the senses, the establishing activity, how the senses set up a world, and you know, if you focus on that idea of creating a world, then the senses are not only a tool anymore. The senses are an activity, a creative activity. They have a kind of a power that you wouldn't assign to a tool, unless it was a power tool, I guess, but that's a different story. So if you want to focus on the knowledge aspect of the establishing activity of the senses, I think the way to do that is to be aware that the senses are establishing a world that includes us, that includes the one who knows. So, and this is not what we usually think, and this goes back to the tool model of the senses. It's, you know, the tool model is this is a little bit crude, but it's as though we are here, and we are the source of awareness or knowing. We meaning the self, basically. The self is the source of awareness and knowing. And in the beginning, according to the tool model, in the beginning, there's just this awareness, but there's nothing being perceived or nothing, in a sense, nothing happening. And then the self activates its tools, you know. So it activates seeing, it activates the eyes, or it activates hearing, or it activates touch. And those are the various tools through which the self then becomes able to make a connection to the outside world. And that's a very natural way. I mean, it's a little, you know, simplistic, but it's closely connected with our way of thinking how things actually work. What I'm saying is that the senses actually do more than that, because when the senses, and this is in the reading, Rinpoche has presented this in different ways in the material that we've been looking at over the last 9 weeks, when the senses reach out to know something, they do it in a characteristic way, which is both determined by and also constitutes the one who is doing the sensing, the one who is perceiving. And that's really the point I'm making. As long as you think, you know, here I am and I'm going to engage in some kind of sensory activity. I'm going to see, I'm going to look around me, I'm going to listen to the sounds around me, and that is very much, you know, that's how we do it, that's how we think about things. As long as that's going on, then you can do this exercise as a mindfulness exercise, but you won't be able to bring in the knowledge dimension. And I think in the end, the knowledge dimension is central. If you just in a kind of simple way, this material that we've been reading is in the part of the book that's about knowledge. So perhaps that helps make the point. But at least that's my view, is that the knowledge dimension here is central, and that goes to the point about intimacy, which I mentioned before, as seeming to me to be the kind of key theme that emerges from this whole program. The tool model has this subject that knows, the senses that make it possible to do the knowing, and then what's known. But Rinpoche talks about an original intimacy, right? Let's take a look for a moment at the opening paragraph of this chapter, this very short chapter. So, this is a very evocative paragraph, which is to say it's a little hard to make sense of, at least for me. If you try to do that in a kind of literal way. So he says, when the senses can embrace all presenting time and all allowing space. So what does that have to do with knowledge? That's exactly what he doesn't mention here. Well, it's that, I think it's the embracing, which is the knowledge dimension. So when the senses can embrace all presenting time and all allowing space, we hear the echo of silent sound and see the shadow of the formless. So he's saying we go beyond, we transcend, I guess is the right word there, the usual operation of the senses. And in fact, we go into a mode of sensing that is completely different from and impossible for our ordinary mode of sensing. Okay. We feel without imagination or memory, taste without substance, smell without discrimination. So all of the usual mental structures, you might say, that we use in constructing our world don't operate. So I don't think we need to try to unless someone has a question or comment about that paragraph, I don't think we need to worry too much about the specific meaning. But what I wanted to use it to for was to evoke this sense of intimacy. And so the key word in this paragraph, the word intimacy is not there, although it is the first word in the next paragraph, is embracing, right? The senses embrace. So what do they embrace? They embrace time and space. I think there are two possible ways then of exploring this. One is the notion of the senses embracing what time and space present and allow. And the other one is that the senses give us the knower as well as the known in what Rinpoche referred to in an earlier chapter, in a kind of original intimacy. So there's the practice of original intimacy, there's the practice of embracing, but in both cases, we are bringing in to the operation of the senses this dimension of knowing which makes our experience whole. And what I mean by that is that it's not that first we know and then we use the senses to connect with what's there to be known, but that our mode of knowing, which is an embracing mode, brings us back into original intimacy, and the senses, the feel of the senses, leads us back into something primary, unitary, and intimate. So, that's by way of leading us back into the practice which we did last week also, which is this practice of focusing on the ongoing activity of the senses in this embracing and intimate way, rather than on what's created, and you could say, rather than on what's created on one side and the one who's creating on the other. All of that comes together in this embracing intimacy. So that may sound like a lot of, it may sound a little abstract. So the answer to that is always to practice. So let's try to do the practice for a few minutes and see what comes up for people, okay? Do this. We'll start now for a few minutes. Okay, let's come back together. I want to give people a chance to comment on that, either orally or by writing something. I will say something to get that process moving. When you use senses as a tool, it seems to me, you create all sorts of identities. You know, I guess a good analogy, let's use it for a moment, is one that is used in, well, people know it even though they don't have direct experience of it. That is a blind person using a cane. So the cane is a tool. But what people report, apparently, blind people who use it, is that they're not aware of the cane as something that is between them and the object. The cane becomes an extension of their sense of touch, and they feel what's at the end of the cane. And you know, in the same way, you could say the senses become an extension of the self, and we feel what's at the end of the sense. You know, we that is to say, we see the object at the end of the sense, for instance. The problem with that approach is that it confirms everything that we take for granted. You know, it in the end, the senses don't have any power beyond that power of confirming. Now, you know, that's not quite right, because the senses, of course, discover the world. You know, when we're walking down the street, we rely on our sense of sight and our sense of touch, certainly, and also our sense of sound, to make sure that we're not getting into trouble, that we're not bumping into people, that we're not getting run over, and so on. So the senses have that power, and that's their function as a tool. But otherwise, the senses really are just confirming the way things are. And I'm not convinced, in fact, I'm very skeptical about any claim that that's all that the senses can do. What I'm really, you know, what we've been exploring, what I'm trying to suggest, is that the senses have this tremendous creative power. So I'll give you an example from when we were sitting just now, since I don't see other people raising examples. I will give you one.
I could give one.
Okay, let's you go ahead. And yeah, go ahead, Michael.
I was looking at these shirts in the closet, nice bright orange and bright green, and I sort of had the feeling that I wasn't pulling them so much as they were just broadcasting their own kind of creativity. And then I had one of those breaths where kind of the lungs sort of spontaneously unfurl and you get a little high from it.
Okay.
And it occurred to me that that's a sense too, and it's more inherently intimate to feel your own body and your own breathing if you are aware of it. And so it just occurred to me that that's kind of senses are not, like in ordinary life also, we're not just using senses as tools. We know our own being from the ones that catch us by surprise like that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point that it's when something catches us by surprise that we move away from the tool model. You know, when we realize that a world is being created, and you don't have to say the senses created. You don't have to say I created. It's just that ongoing activity of establishing. That's how Rinpoche, that's the verb that Rinpoche uses. Yeah, that's good. I will give an example, and then Bruce has written something here. I'll give you an example from what I was just looking at. I'm sitting at the computer, and there are various things on my desk, and I was looking at these different things on my desk, and they're actually kind of closely jammed together, and I realized that I was really insisting on the identity of each thing that I was looking at. There was a computer screen, and there's a mouse, and there's a lamp, and of course, from a TSK perspective, and in terms of the first paragraph of this chapter, it makes a lot more sense to talk about the all-embracing space within which those arise. And so the moment I let go of the identity, then the kind of creative activity emerged. So there's the one, the identity of the self who's using the senses, and there's the identity of the individual things that are discovered. And all of that is in a sense the opposite of intimacy. So let's take a look at what other people are saying. So Bruce says the knower and known showed up as inseparable for me when I was looking at some window blinds, and they were subtly wavering and vibrating, not from wind, but because my body, mind, eyes were subtly moving. Well, that's interesting. I wonder. Well, that's your experience. Good. I tried to open and relax into an always already, and found that in my body felt sense, the sense of me as abiding and the feeling of the body were inseparable, intimately present together. Okay. I don't really have any comment on that. I think there's a world of discovery available, and it doesn't have to be, as Rinpoche said in the chapter for last week, it doesn't have to be that we have special experiences. What can happen is that we become aware of the ordinary in a very different way. And that really is a practice that can sustain us, I think, and the kind of focus on it through the senses is a great way to do it. So David writes, David's always outdoors somehow. I don't understand how you do that, David. sensing by seeing an open field of hay, I noticed the knowing aspect making meaning out of what I see, weaving it into a story I can think about, noticing the colors, remembering how the field used to look, what the farmer will do to bale the hay, etc. Well, good. I'm glad you raised that. I said last week, and I remember Caroline was surprised by this. I said some people are just naturally attuned to their senses, and some people go more towards the story dimension or more toward emotions. There's a few kinds of possibilities. And so David here is really focusing more on the story dimension, sensing in the context of a kind of ongoing, I don't like the word narrative, but I don't know what other word there is, in kind of an ongoing story. I mean, there's that word, about how things are, and yes, what the farmer will do with the hay, and what the field looked like before. Now that's not the senses, and it's exactly Rinpoche mentions in the second sentence here. He says of this first paragraph that we've been looking at, he says we feel without imagination or memory. So imagination is what the farmer is going to do with it, and memory is what the field used to look like. So that is our kind of ordinary mode. But The reason I'm bringing that up, I don't think in any way that suggests, oh, David didn't do this the right way, he didn't focus on the senses. No, I don't think so at all. I think that once you tune in to the senses without the strong sense of identity and so on, then all of these different dimensions of experience, including the stories that we manufacture or that are just kind of always going on in the background, at least for some people, not for everybody, then all of that is available. It's an aspect of our experience that is not directly the senses, but that is intimately, to use that word, affected by what goes on in sense experience. And if we open sense experience, if we connect to the activity of the senses, then we also open, and in the very specific sense that we really become tuned into what our stories are about, what's going on. We recognize that a world is being created, and in part it's being created by the senses. But I think it's a mistake to say, well, if we could just go back to this, if we could just live in sense experience, the way we like to imagine that animals do sometimes, if we could just do that, then that intimacy would be there for us. No, I think that the intimacy is much more the outcome of recognizing that what presents itself and what's created is a take on you could say, the construction of a field that draws on or builds on time and space and knowledge. And we can be aware of or connect with time and space and knowledge in those different manifestations. And I think that's important because, a lot of times people say, oh, I started to do the exercise and then I got lost in my thoughts, or something like that. And getting lost in thoughts is a little problematic. But having thoughts or noticing how a sensation stimulates a thought or a reflection or a fantasy, and just being aware of this ongoing creation in a way that allows for an intimacy with in and among all the different elements. That I think is very much at the heart of what TSK presents. So Bruce comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Oh, this is Linda.
Yeah.
So I was sitting out. I'm sitting outside too, and I'm looking at this little pond and this great big concrete structure. It's kind of like a fountain with rocks on it. And as I was doing this exercise, it was sort of like this concrete structure just seemed it seemed porous, or it seemed different. You know what I mean? It wasn't that it looked different, but there was a sense of porousness, I guess. And there's a little fish in the pond, and I had more of a sense of them having little, little things moving around in their body, just their mechanical processes as well as a fish in the pond or something. And one, I don't know, I'm wondering, is that like a, I don't know, it was just an interesting aspect of things look different. They don't look different, but they have a different texture, a different seeming structure or something like that. You know what I mean? Like there's space inside of them or something like that. Not literally, but you know what I mean.
Well,
So.
literally there is space inside of them, but maybe that's
I guess that's it.
But okay, yeah. Okay. I think, the world presents itself to us with complete conviction from moment to moment. From moment to moment, we say to ourselves, "This is the way things are." Even that is saying too much, I suppose, because it seems to me that most of the time, from moment to moment, we're just not noticing
Not
anything at
noticing.
all. We're just kind of, on autopilot. But if we can go a step beyond that, then we can say, what is there in this world? Well, the world tells us, it insists on the way things are. And you could say, I might not say this the same way another time, but you could say that you know that you're doing TSK, that you're practicing with the TSK vision or exploring the TSK vision, when that absolute insistence that this is the way things are gets called into question. When you realize either that something has shifted, which is what you were just describing, Linda, or you find yourself looking at some aspect of your experience that you hadn't noticed before, or you become aware of the way in which you interact, you as a self interact, or how the self is setting itself up from moment to moment. Anything that brings this quality of inquiry to the fore, where you just say, "Oh, gee, it doesn't have to be that way, or it isn't that way. Things are a little different." That's very, very helpful, and I think it's especially helpful because we may have those kinds of experiences from time to time, and not think much of them. But it's especially helpful once you have the context that TSK gives you, because then you say, "This matters." This really, there's the potential here to change everything, and not to change it in some random way. Maybe we like it more, maybe we like it less, but to change it in the direction of intimacy. We're kind of coming to the end of our session today and toward coming to the end of the course. So let's look at that, because a couple of things. I actually hadn't realized this. I felt embarrassed when I saw it and that I hadn't realized it. But the next section of Knowledge of Time and Space, because we're at the end of one big section now, is called Intimacy. So we have been moving in that direction, and you might like to go on and keep reading in that section, and see where it leads you. But whether you do that or not, I think it does suggest that there is a that direction is really powerful, and the senses are a gateway into that. So Pat, in her comment, said, asked the question about the power of the senses. Could I say more? And then she said, "Gee, I guess you're doing that." And I guess I did. So I won't say more about that. But let's look for just a moment at this interesting passage where Rinpoche says that there are nine progressive stages to cultivating the senses. And he has a tendency to do that, and then you say, "Well, gee, I wish he'd explained that more." But I think it's only meant to be evocative in this case. So we've talked a lot about the first one. The senses are a tool. And then the second one is the senses are a vehicle for knowledge. Well, I'm not going to try to go through all of these nine and make comments on them, but that's in the same direction, but it's a little bit more expansive, a little bit more allowing. And then the senses is a channel for deeper understanding. And you could say that that's kind of what we've been exploring, that there's the possibility for understanding that is not the understanding that's available to the self ordinarily, that goes deeper than that. And then he says the senses become friends. I guess friends with us or friends with each other, probably both. And then he has one that I think is kind of surprising, was for me, is for me. He says, as this quality deepens, we recognize the senses as agents of a loving master. The notion of a master, that's surprising. It doesn't seem to go with the usual TSK flavor of things, I guess. And I guess my best take on that is that in a way, it's a helpful transition to think about, here are the senses, and we know how we usually use them. And by, in a sense, transplanting them over to a different knower, we can allow for the possibility of a knowing that's not ours, but we don't have to give up the idea of somebody knowing. Someone somewhere knows something, but it's not me. So that could be this loving master. And then we can see it's transitional because he says, in time we see this master as our good friend. Eventually our friend becomes the dearest and best of friends who gives us the gift of our own being. Intimacy awakens, and in the end we find the fulfillment of a perfect love. So that may not be your experience this morning in doing the practice, but there is a tremendous potential here. So, what I really want to say in terms of going forward, there will not be a class this summer. I haven't thought too much. I have thought some, but I haven't come to any conclusions about the fall. What the senses give us that's so great is that we can always practice with the senses. There's always sense experience going on. And I have found during this last week or two when we've been working with this, just speaking for myself, I am not always practicing TSK in any very overt sense. But with this kind of practice, it's really very easy to keep coming back to it. It's you need the intention, you need the wish. And hopefully the words like intimacy and embrace and love help inspire you to go in that direction. But it becomes a very natural thing to, at various times during the day, to be looking at sense experience in terms of the possibilities that we've been discussing and evoking. So that's basically what I want to say. So David asks, the new book. Well, David, I'm going to. How do you say that in computer talk? I'm going to discuss that with you offline. We will do that. I do want to mention a couple of things that are practical. One is that the TSK retreat, as most of you probably noticed, was shifted. It was actually planned for, I guess, the week after next, but a lot of people who expressed some interest in coming had conflicts in June, so we've shifted it to August. I don't know the exact dates. It's pretty much the middle of August. August 17th or something like that is one of the days. Anyway, if you're interested, you'll be hearing more about it, but keep that in mind. And the other thing for those of you who are in the Bay Area, actually not so many of you are, but some of you are, just a reminder that this coming Saturday there's going to be a CCI event on a theme that is certainly relevant to everything in TSK, the theme Who is I? But it's not going to be a TSK-oriented discussion. It's going to be people, most everybody in it will be one of the participants in a conference we have on first-person methods in consciousness studies. How do you study consciousness from within, which is a topic of some interest in the field of consciousness studies right now. I'll be one of the speakers. And although I may not mention this in the talk, what I have been saying to people for years, because we've been having these consciousness conferences for years, is that the way to understand consciousness is to be conscious differently. And that's also for me a very nice summary of what we're doing in TSK a lot of the time, being conscious differently. Kathleen has noted in the chat that I did actually hit the middle of the retreat. The It's scheduled for August 14th through 19th, so keep that in mind also. Okay, well, everybody, thank you very much. I always learn a tremendous amount during the course of these programs, and it's really helpful for me, and I hope for other people to let these themes be ongoing in our lives, which is what these weekly classes allow us to do. So I wish you a good summer, and hope that you find ways to continue on with your exploration and inquiry in the coming weeks and months. And we'll connect up later.